Welcome to the weekly podcast all about turning the great American RV adventure into stress-less camping. Each week, we explore tips, tricks, ideas, and destinations, and talk to the happiest campers in the RV world. Pull up a seat at the campfire as we enjoy some stress-less camping.
Welcome to the campfire.
I'm Tony.
I'm Peggy.
And we are two RV industry veterans who travel part-time
in a small trailer,
looking to share big adventures and help you with great tips,
tricks,
and discounts.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, happy Pi Day.
Pi.
Today is 3.14, which is the beginning of an infinite number of digits that make up the the constant called pi in math. And did you know that the area of a circle is pi r squared?
Square pi.
But pi aren't squared. Pi are round.
Pi are round.
Cake are square.
Sometimes, but also cake are round.
Anyway, go out and get yourself some pie and eat some pie today and celebrate math.
So I will tell you that my goal is to, by the time you're listening to this, be in possession of peanut butter pie.
Yeah, I think we could probably put together our own peanut butter pie. I think we can make it.
Because peanut butter goes with everything.
Indeed.
I love peanut butter. So we've been following ABC Upfitters, who built our solar and lithium system in our Rockwood Mini Light, and looking at some of the installs they've done in the past few weeks.
Yeah, they've been busy.
Yeah, they have been busy. There is another Rockwood Mini Light headed their way. We know who you are.
Congratulations.
Yep, absolutely. But also, we just saw them upfit a Coachman motorhome with 920 amp hours of lithium. I mean, this thing is a beast.
Yeah.
We saw them upfit a Class B van with a system, which, I mean, that's a challenge because Class B vans are pretty space constrained. The bottom line is, if you are considering having a solar or lithium system put into your RV, or just curious, can I do it? What's it going to cost? Will it work?
It doesn't matter what kind of RV you have. Obviously, it can be anything from a van to a big old Class A.
Yep. Pretty much if you have a curiosity about solar and lithium systems, the good folks at ABC Upfitters have an answer. And one of the things we've said in the past is that they are not just really good at these installs and using high quality master volt systems, things like that, but they're also able to translate from really understanding these systems to explaining them and making them just work. And that's how we describe the system in our Rockwood Mini Light. It just works. So if you're curious at all, you can give them a call at 574-333-3225, or look at the show notes, and there's a video with Ben from ABC Upfitters on stresslesscamping.com, or go right to their website. So lots of options, but just really good people who tell it straight and are able to actually answer questions and do a really solid job of putting these systems into RVs and setting them up to match your style of camping and traveling. Again, ABC Upfitters, as you know, our favorite solar and lithium install company using Mastervolt components, 574-333-3225. You know, another thing that they could put a solar and lithium system into is a vintage RV.
That's right. And today we're going to learn a little bit more about vintage RVs and parts for vintage RVs with our friend Steve Hinchin.
We have bought a lot of stuff from Vintage Trailer Supply as we restored other vintage RVs. We've had several, let's just say. They've been there and just done a good job. Are you vintage curious? Do you have a vintage trailer? Do you have a modern trailer? Or a motorhome, whatever. Anyway, without any further ado, here we go.
Today, we're super pleased to welcome Steve Hinchin. Steve is the owner, operator of Vintage Trailer Supply. Thank you, Steve, for spending some time with us. Can you tell us what Vintage Trailer Supply is?
Well, thanks both of you for letting me talk to you. I'm very appreciative. So Vintage Trailer Supply has been around for about 20 years now, and actually longer. It's probably, I don't know, if I do the math, we're coming into our 25th year now.
Wow.
Back in the AOL dial-up days, we started an online business to serve. It was originally just vintage Airstream people. Mm-hmm. Back in those days, kind of the collectible vintage trailer hobby was in its infancy. And there were a few hardy souls out there who had Airstreams and other trailers too, but we were focused on the Airstream group because the others hadn't really caught fire yet. Uh-huh. And I bought an old Airstream and wanted to find some parts. So we all got on these little listservs back in the day and tried to talk it out and figure out where people could get things and all that. And frankly, there wasn't really a supply source. There were some things that everybody needed, but they all were sourcing them individually, and it just wasn't easy to get stuff. So I started a little buying co-op with basically the idea was, first thing we wanted were some folks in the Airstream world. They love their aluminum, and so they wanted aluminum propane tanks to go on the fronts of their old trailers.
Oh.
And you just couldn't get them. So I contacted the company Worthington, who made them all, and said, hey, if I organize some people, would you sell them to us? And I remember having that first truckload of tanks. We took orders, and I took orders and had everybody pay in advance, and no profit involved. And so we just got some propane things. I remember them delivered to my house on a truck. I'd never had a truck delivery of anything in my life, and having to have all these tanks. And then I had to figure out how to ship them all. And anyway, that was the beginning of it. And I quickly realized that there was tremendous demand for, you know, just stuff that people needed for old trailers. So ever since then, we've been sort of growing in tandem with the collectible travel trailer world, which includes both vintage trailers and also really Airstreams, I think, of all ages, because, you know, it's an investment. They're a big investment, and they last for a long time. And so we consider them collectible. So collectible and vintage travel trailers has always been our focus. And over the years, we branched out from Airstream. Probably after about 10 years, we realized that the rest of the world of these old trailers, especially from the 1950s and 1960s, were becoming very collectible. And people were starting to want to make them authentic, you know, go back and find the right window or door hardware.
Right.
So over that time, we went from just finding hard parts to making hard to find parts.
Oh.
And so we now reproduce a lot of parts. We have reproduced under our tooling taillights and door handles and all kinds of other things that people need and just simply weren't able to get. So we've now grown into having a catalog of a couple thousand different things, and many of them are things we've sourced out of the old catalogs of existing companies. And then in a few cases, in maybe a couple hundred cases, we've had the parts made.
And I read on your website that you started in a spare bedroom in your house. So I assume that I know that you are not still in a spare bedroom in your house, because we've been to your warehouse.
Yeah, it's changed a lot. So it started in just me in a spare bedroom and a second bedroom in a little house in Vermont. And over time, it went from my bedroom to my shed, and then from my shed to a basement, and then from a basement to a garage. And then finally I got a little space, still in Vermont back in the day, and got a little two-car garage with a little office attached, and did that for a while. And then it just kind of kept growing. And then eventually we realized that we really didn't want to be in New England anymore. You know, New England's a beautiful place, and there are some vintage trailers out there, but the truth is that most of the collectible hobby is out west, and it's certainly throughout every state. We sell parts to every state and many, many countries around mm-hmm. the world, but the heart of it is really in the west. And so, and you know, part of that is because that's where the open lands are to go camping. So trailers, the recreational vehicle hobby has always been kind of in the Midwest and further. And so we moved to Santa Fe, New Mexico, not really in the middle of any urban area, more in a more rural area, but a beautiful place to live and do business, and kind of at the crossroads of so many old historic trails and tourist routes, and just a nice place to come visit anyway.
And right on Route 66.
Yeah, that's right, on old Route 66. Although Route 66 got relocated through Albuquerque instead of Santa Fe in later years. So a lot of people don't realize what you just said, which is that old Route 66 came right through Santa Fe. So it's a beautiful place to live and a beautiful place to work. And for a while before COVID, we opened a retail, beautiful retail showroom. And then COVID hit us and we knocked that back. We'd already been pretty overextended just getting to that point. And so we haven't opened that showroom again. And I don't think we will. And I feel sad about that. We really liked welcoming our visitors to our place. But the truth is that during the COVID world, a lot of people learn to work from home. And so my entire customer service team pretty much works from home now. And so we just don't have the staffing in our warehouse, in our distribution center anymore to support a showroom.
Right.
You know, maybe someday we'll open that again. But for now, we think that it's just not that efficient as much as we enjoyed that. And it was just a beautiful experience for customers who visited. We think probably the better thing for us is to stay focused on our mail order, which is our entire 2-decade history, and just kind of make sure that that's as solid as possible. So, you know, it's a profitable business, but it's not a big business. And I think that we always have to keep an eye on, you know, this is a very small little industry in the end. And we have to be very careful the way we conduct the business to make sure we can be here for the long run. And we make some hard choices. And I think that in this case, you know, an example of that would be the fact that we can't open our showroom right now. But another one is that we know there's a lot of demand for parts. People really need more stuff. And we just simply, you know, we can only grow so fast. We can't necessarily make a lock for a front door if it was only used for 3 years back in the 1960s on 2 models of trailer, you know? And so as much as we want to meet that demand for everyone, we're having to be very strategic where we make our investments. So, sure. So that's kind of realistically the history of our company, is that the demand has always been greater than what we can supply.
Well, it's something that's curious to me. We have had vintage trailers. We don't at the moment, although you never know what's going to happen, but we've had vintage trailers, and it seems that in some cases, the trailer manufacturer themselves would make parts like door handles or things like that.
More so than it is now,
where
one company makes all the stoves and one company makes all the door handles and one company makes all the windows. Back then, they just used to make all those things themselves.
Yeah, I think it's sometimes like that. I think it's you've really drawn on a very important point. People like to compare the collectible and vintage travel trailer world to the classic car world. And I think they are similar in many ways, but they're very different also. If you look at, you know, Ford, right? So Ford created the contemporary model of manufacturing, which is to create standardization and assembly lines. Everything's very thought through in terms of the cost and mass production, right?
Right.
The travel trailer world has been much more like the custom home building world, where, you know, guys show up to work in the morning, they look around, they go, what should we do today? You know, let's do the electric work today, right? And I think that you saw that on most RV manufacturing up until maybe the last 20 years or so was still very much kind of that one-off mentality. You know, Airstream worked very hard starting in the, well, probably from the beginning, but you really started to see it kick in the late 60s, where things started to get a little more uniform. But you're right that the parts were made, you'd see the same parts sometimes used on many trailers, but more often than not, especially with the Airstream, which is the biggest brand, they would have their own stuff and you would only find it on Airstream. And even within a single model year, 1964 Airstreams are a wonderful example of how frustrating it can all be. They tried 3 different window styles in 1964 in one single production year. And so we see some trailers that are in 1964 Airstreams that have louvered jalousie windows throughout the entire trailer. Other ones that have a framed window that was only used in 1964. And other ones that use the same window that they used in 1963. And so it really depends on what was available at the time. Same thing with the taillights. They might have typically used one style of taillight, but if they couldn't get that taillight, heck, they just throw a different taillight on there.
Yeah.
And so when we try to reproduce a part, we have to be conscious of that. And not, first of all, we have to give our customers really good advice. So we're careful not to say, this fits. We often say, well, it usually fits. You should check.
This probably fits.
Send us some photographs. You know, send us some photographs and we'll work it out with you. And on the other hand, we have to be careful not to produce a part that maybe was just a minor variant on that item.
Mm-hmm.
We see that too, where there were a few major companies. Most people have heard of the Bargeman Company, who have older trailers, because Bargeman made locks quite a bit, and they also made a lot of other things, taillights and such. But they would make three or four variants on something that looked almost identical, but it really wasn't. And so this has been a manufacturing issue for us, is that we're careful and we're very methodical. And when we do bring a part to market, it's usually very good quality and we don't have any issues with it, but it can take us 2 years to get it there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Tooling and all of those kind of things has got to be a kind of hair puller.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big investment. And when you make a big investment, you want to make darn sure you can get your money back.
Right.
I was just talking to my customer service manager this morning about how do we choose how much stuff to order and, you know, can we afford to buy something? And it's often the issue is that you want to see you get your money back within a few months if you can, so that you can put that money into the next part. And sadly, sometimes that money has to sit on a shelf for a couple of years before it actually comes back to you.
Yeah.
You know, and some projects are a labor of love. I made a etched nameplate for a 1936 Airstream. Now, if you can imagine, almost no 1936 Airstreams have been made.
Yeah.
It was a brass nameplate that was only used in the 30s, 36, 37. And I made them, but you know, I have to make like 100 of them when I make them. And there's probably not that many trailers left
right.
from that era, right?
Right.
And so we did it as a labor of love. And we did that because we want to be unique. We want to be able to really show ourselves as the people who can do things that other people can't. So right. sometimes we do labors of love. The other time we do labors of love is when I own a trailer and I can't find parts for it. I'll make the part, whether it's profitable or not, just so I can have it. So it's often sadly a cold game of what we make. And I focus on this because I know a lot of people would like us to make more stuff, and I'd like to also, but give us time. And often we partner with our customers when they come to us and say, hey, I'd like this. And I say, well, you know, we could probably do that, but we don't have enough information about your trailer. Mm-hmm. Could you help us? Could we go back and forth with some photos? Maybe we send you a prototype, let you test it for us. And that's actually, that partnering is a way we make a lot of parts also. It's a small business.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting when we restored, we had a 1970 Aristocrat Landliner.
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember how many boxes of stuff I got from you guys, but it was a lot, as Peggy said. And it was a lot of things that just made a difference, helping us with the jalousie windows and vents and taillights, some common things, butyl tape and
sure, yeah,
all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so even with your, you know, as you explained, some limitations, your list, your inventory list is really extensive. I mean, everything from fabric to make new curtains to antennas and
yeah, there's
a little bit of everything.
It's everything. And we do try to have some, you know, some of that stuff that's just fun stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a big seller for us, but it's kind of fun. You know, people will throw in extra. I just saw someone this morning put, you know, a couple mugs in their cart along with their vent or
right.
whatever it was. You know, they just wanted to have some of that culture at home as well as when they're on the road. And the other piece is, like you mentioned, butyl tape, is that we'll often provide items that can be sourced otherwise, but we can provide a little bit of technical support along with it, and it's convenient. So mm-hmm. In the case of a butyl tape, there are two or three chemical formulas for butyl tape, and we'll do that research. We'll offer the better one, and then we'll talk to people about, you know, how thick should you buy your butyl tape? How wide should you buy your butyl tape? What are the pros and cons of that? And folks can see that, you know, maybe there is a better butyl tape, and maybe I shouldn't get the eighth inch thick. Maybe I should get the 16th inch thick in this case, in this application, right? And so it's something that if you go to your local RV shop where they're selling new RVs and they have a parts counter or a parts department, and they'll sell a lot of these things often, but they don't necessarily understand old trailers very well. And they're not going to be able to help you think through it too well.
Right.
As good as they are with the newer stuff, they may not be able to help you with the older. It's kind of like not taking your classic Mustang to the Ford dealer for service, right?
Right.
Yeah, or even the Quick Lube place.
Yeah. You mentioned if it's a trailer I have, how many trailers do you have?
I don't know what the saying is about the painter never painting his own house. You know, it's that I have currently, I have a 1949 Spartan Manor, which is just a beauty. I have a 1949 Spartanette, which is not a beauty.
Wow.
It's kind of holding other parts right now. I have a 1956 Airstream Caravanner, and I recently sold my 1946 Curtis Wright Model 2.
Oh man.
Wow.
So I tend to like the old stuff, but I'm also, my wife has two newer Airstreams and a 1976 Airstream, and I think that's what she's got right now. So, you know, we like it all, but my babies are usually either my 40s Spartans or my 50s Airstreams.
Nice.
I think a lot of people may not know of the Spartan Aircraft Company.
Right.
But those, yeah. Especially the Spartanette, man, you got me on that one. I just absolutely love those things.
Yeah. Spartan Aircraft Company in from Tulsa, Oklahoma, they actually started as an aircraft company, and they were always called Spartan Aircraft. They worked in World War II to do some prototype planes. They tried to sell some stuff to the military, and they had a little success with that. But what ended up happening is immediately following the war, they started making Spartan trailers, and they made way more money, sold way more trailers than they ever did airplanes. And they ended up being quite well known for that, even though every trailer says Spartan Aircraft on it. And yeah. So it's kind of a neat thing. And they're gorgeous, gorgeous trailers. The Spartanettes are pretty. They have but they're sort of a little more like, if I know you do, but if your listeners know what a Can-Am is, it's got flat sides and a roll top roof. And that's a style of trailer that's been used for years.
Yeah.
And the Spartanettes are like that, but very long versions of that. The Spartan manors and mansions, depending on the era, the manors in the 40s have this really big rear end, very rounded rear end with flat sides and a flat roof and beautiful panoramic windows in the front. It's just a gorgeous trailer. And they're not real rare. I mean, they're not common, but they're not real rare. They can be got out there. What's great about the Spartan Company, and if the name Aircraft tips you off, is that they're aluminum, right? But not just aluminum exteriors, they're aluminum framing also, like Airstreams. So any old trailer that has aluminum structure in the walls is going to last.
Right.
It may be the floor rots out. It may be your chassis gets rusty and needs to be redone, but the actual structure is going to make it through the years. And that's why you see a lot of collectible Airstreams, a lot of collectible Spartans, and there are other brands also, because they have lasted in numbers from the early days.
Yeah.
Due to the fact that they have aluminum structure in them. And so, yeah, certainly the cabinetry goes bad. Certainly the floors go bad. And they're not minor restoration projects. They're large scale restoration projects with very specialized skills, and therefore professional restorers spend many hundreds of hours on them, and it costs a lot. Wood frame walls are much less expensive to put back together and an easier do it yourself at home project, but we don't see the survivors from the 40s and 50s as much.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that they're so easy to kind of just decay in the elements, especially in the more wet climates.
Right.
You know, the Spartans, as you know, I'm sharing with our listeners, the Spartans tended to be sold to people who actually used them for housing as opposed to vacations. And you'll see them parked, you know, in the desert or in fields, sometimes with a cover, and they're still there 50, 60 years later for exactly the reason you said. And now there's enough interest. People go and, well, I'll pull that out of the hole and restore it. And unfortunately, I'm in several Spartan groups, and a lot of people get about halfway through and go, oh boy, what did I do?
Yeah, it's true. So, yeah, I mean, actually now a lot of those are 70 years old, right? They're not even 50 anymore. Yeah, and you're right. In many cases, you still see them parked in the mobile home courts, and they're still, you know, maybe they've had a roof built over them, or maybe a big porch built onto the side of them, and they're still there. And the ones you're thinking of are mostly the 50s on later. They were the bigger ones. They got bigger as time went on. And there was a big heyday in the 50s with, you know, mobile homes, where the travel trailer industry and the mobile home industry were sort of one and the same back then.
Mm, yeah.
There were a few brands like Airstream that had a vision to not be that. And they wanted to be on the road, on the road, on the road. But there were many of the brands that kind of morphed between the two.
Yeah.
In the earlier years, post-war, Spartan would make kind of both versions. And so they made smaller 24-foot trailers, 25-foot trailers. And then they would make the larger, you know, 28, 30, that kind of thing. So, yeah, you really do see that. And I think a lot of the survivors you see out there are those 50s large ones that can be very long.
Yeah.
And they're beautiful, too. And some of them are extremely collectible. They do get pulled out from the where the folks used to live in them year-round, and they turn them into, you know, everything from a tiny home to a pool house. You know, it can be anything.
Yeah.
We were at an RV park, and someone pulled in with a Spartan. I was just, you know, floored.
Yeah. Takes a big tow vehicle on some of those big trailers. Yeah.
Yeah. I think this was a Spartan. It was a single axle trailer, and it was just, okay. Of course, it was beautiful.
Yep. They're beautiful. And like you said, people abandon the projects, and it's not just Spartans, you know, we've all abandoned projects. And I think that whether it's a small wood frame trailer or a giant aluminum frame trailer, you know, it's a hard thing to do. And some people are naturally able to just, they've done a car or they've done their house and they're ready to go on some, and they have time. Maybe they're retired or semi-retired and they can do it. For a lot of folks, they don't have the space to do it well. So it becomes a seasonal project. The skills sets can be quite diverse. It's not just carpentry and electrical. It's not just plumbing. It's also metal fabrication and sometimes airframe work, aircraft riveting, and being able to bend aluminum and form aluminum, and not to mention welding on your chassis and getting underneath there. And you know, it's a big deal to restore a trailer. And I think that it's not for everyone. And, you know, you see a lot of projects picked up halfway through or dropped halfway through. And
yeah, Tony gave me a funny look when you said that, because we did have that 1970 Aristocrat. And yes, we abandoned it, but we didn't really abandon it. We turned it over to our friend Byron, who has picked up all the places that we were short on ability. And he's been doing some fantastic things with it.
Well, Byron knows his way. Yeah, up he and knows down what to do pretty well.
Yeah, I'm actually in awe. I love the parts, but I'm in awe of the people who can do the complete, you know, A to Z on a trailer. It's a pretty impressive skill set.
Yeah. But then getting into a vintage trailer, I mean, the community is incredible. So if you do find yourself, you know, like, I want to get a vintage whatever, but like, we were in the Aristocrat sort of family, but there's a huge community as well. It's not just the trailers, it's the people.
Yeah.
It's one of the things that I think I hear the most about is how warm and caring people are in the travel trailer world, and specifically the vintage travel trailer world. There's a true sense of generous support for each other. And I think that some of the technology we have, you know, with podcasts and YouTube, has really helped people go even further. And of course, all the forums that people can tap into and ask questions or look up answers that have already been asked. And some of the merchants in the industry are also very supportive and can answer those questions on the phone for you. We keep a small team of folks here full time who are on the phones ready to go to answer technical questions, or actually you can just send an email. So there is plenty of support out there. I think, again, if you have the time and the space to do it, and you want to do the work yourself specifically, it's achievable by a lot of people. The skills can come along. It's really more, you need to have time and you need to have space to do it.
Right.
Well, you could also attend Paul and Caroline Lasitanola's workshops. I mean, that's a great place to learn some skills.
That's a great point. Paul and Caroline put together boot camps and other types of programs now, especially on the western half of the United States, where people can go and camp and learn at the same time and go to classes and workshops. I think that's a really nice way to do it. You know, the other thing you can do is you can tap into some of the professionals in the industry and have them do pieces of it. So if you can't do all of it, you can pay them to do parts. Now, I wouldn't say it's an inexpensive thing. you know, I think we all underestimate the number of hours it takes to do things. And it really does take a tremendous numbers of dozens of hours to do just about anything. And so I think that when you do hire a professional, you are going to be spending some money. But if it jumpstarts you, if it maybe it moves you through a difficult part of your restoration, it can be well worth it to just keep you moving. Remember, the end goal here is to go camping, right? The end goal is to go have some fun.
Right. Exactly.
It's not to spend your entire, you know, decade in a garage somewhere or, you know, working on a trailer. So what can you do to just go camping? And in some cases it means go camping before you've got your electric hooked up, or your, you know, maybe you've got basically a metal tent you're going camping in.
Well,
you
can go out and do that's it. Pretty much what we took the Aristocrat out one yep. time in between yep, the yep. amount of stuff we had done and the it's time for Byron to take over phase.
Well, we got yeah. it pretty, I mean, we got a lot of stuff working
right,
in that.
Sure.
And that's the other thing. A lot of these core systems, like the plumbing was, at least in the Aristocrat, was all sweated copper, and all the appliances were still functional because they didn't build junk in those days.
Yeah.
It was amazing what still worked in this 50-year-old
oh, yeah.
trailer.
Yeah. I think that, you know, you really have to not be a perfectionist if you want to go camping. And I think that in some ways, this is why we see folks who have older trailers often buy a newer trailer too. And I know that's a luxury, right? And not everyone can do that. But if you can buy something to go camping in while you're working on your project, I think it'll keep your spirit in what you originally began with, which is to go get on the road, go meet some folks, or go see some beautiful national park somewhere. You know, stay in touch with your original reasoning for doing it. It can be discouraging otherwise. I mean, the car guys already know that one of the things when you're doing a project that might take many months or years, one of the things to do is just to make continual small progress. If you can just go out to the garage and do one little thing each day, mm-hmm. it can be as simple as you're going to clean up your mess from the day before, right? Something to get you out there that just gets you to do it. That's a really nice thing. There's a lot of psychology to restoring a trailer. I think some of us have talked about it a lot in terms of the barriers and obstacles to doing the work. And it's very similar to the car world, but of course it's extremely rewarding too. You know, there's nothing like it if you want that community and want to also go have that freedom of the road. And there's a creative aspect to it. In our industry, very interestingly, women drive the purchasing and the decision making and the schedules equally or more than the men do.
Yeah.
And we know that that's because this is more than a get your fingernails dirty kind of thing. This is a lifestyle. It's a dream of doing something with your family or your partner, or maybe because you've had a big life transition and you need to go and be independent. You need to go do something for yourself.
Yeah.
And so women are often driving this, and we love that aspect of what we do, is that there's a creative and there's a family aspect to it all.
Yeah. But like I say, also, vintage RV rallies are so much fun. And my trick with restoring old cars always used to be make them as pretty as possible first, because then I'd be like, oh, well, I can't have that really good looking 64 Corvair sitting in my garage and not have it running. That was my my thinking.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, so do you ever get to go camping lately? I mean, I know you're very busy with the business.
You know, I do. I have done more until very recently. The last few years, I also have teenage daughters. And so I spend a lot of time, driving them to the shopping center or whatever, right? So I'm on daddy duty quite a bit. So that's my first and foremost priority. But for me, I love going to the rallies. It's where I meet customers and I get to hear what didn't go right with our parts or what is needed. Mm-hmm. I get to walk around and do live research on a variety of trailers that I wouldn't normally see. So I go to, you know, I for years I went to Pismo and Modernism in the West.
Gosh.
I've displayed at Modernism for years. And just in recent years, I think really since COVID, and actually even the second half of COVID, I've kind of stepped back a little bit and refocused on getting my work done at home. There's only so much research a person can do, then they have to go execute the game plan. And so that's been, you know, it was a good excuse to go play. I miss it. I haven't been doing it the last couple of years enough, and it's time to get back out there. I do go camping in the newer trailers, you know, just on weekends and such more now.
And do the girls go with you, or are they like at the point in their teenage lives where the mall is more important?
There's no malls anymore.
Well, they are, it's more friends than shopping for them. They're happy that kids today, a lot of kids today just go thrifting. It's a thing.
Yeah.
So for them, they're actually more interested in friends. But I have my older one is going off to college this fall, and my younger one's still solidly in high school. So things get a little lighter for me, but, you know, but then I'll miss them and I'll want to go hang out with them. So we're at that phase where it's no longer so much an obligation as it is. I wish they would spend time with me more.
Well, if you ever need somebody to pull a trailer to Pismo or Modernism Week, we have a 3/4 ton.
We have a truck.
And we love that kind of stuff.
Have you had a chance to go to Modernism yet?
No.
We have not.
And every year we look from the sidelines, and we have friends. We have a friend who owns a tiki bar. And of course, they're there every year. And it's in Southern California. And then we know, I don't know if you've met Charles Phoenix, but he's somebody we know.
Yes.
Hey, okay.
Yes.
There's no reason we haven't gone other than we haven't gone.
Yeah.
Well, for listeners who may not know what we're even talking about, every February in Palm Springs, there's a week called Modernism Week. And it's actually a celebration of the fact that Palm Springs has tremendous modernist, mid-century modernist architecture and culture dating way back. You know, we have it's the Frank Sinatra, Marilyn Monroe effect, right? And, but some of the architectural wonders in Palm Springs are opened up for the week. And there's a general celebration of the town and the architecture. And it just so happens there's also a mid-century trailer event, which is more a show. It's not so much a rally. It's really a show of, you know, maybe 50 mid-century trailers are also put on display. And what's very interesting is that it has become the most popular attraction of Modernist Week for the entire town. Even though it's not as old as the Modernism Week, and even though people are coming from all over the world to go to Modernism Week every year, the trailer show is by far the most popular thing. And so it's a lot of fun for those who display their trailers, because they're really putting them on display for a weekend while they go stay in a hotel and drink together. But you interact with a lot of people who have no experience at all with travel trailers, but they understand the way that it's part of mid-century culture. And so it's a lot of fun to be one of the people who display trailers, but it's just as much fun to go see them.
Might I just realized
we're gonna be near
next
there
year next might year. Work out.
Yeah,
we might, that might be what we do next year, and after we get done in Quartzsite.
Yeah, why wouldn't we?
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, I guess that's it for our questions. I mean, it's been really great getting to know you here.
Absolutely.
And as I said, we've certainly bought a fair amount of things from Vintage Trailer Supply. But then as a camper, we always have a couple of questions that we ask. And the first is, what is your best camping memory?
Oh, goodness. It's got to be at the National Park Campground at Arches, National Park in Utah. It's the most beautiful campground, and it's very hard to get into. And when you do get in, sometimes you have to, well, I think it's changed now, but you queue up in the morning to see if you can get one of the spots for somebody leaving. But it's at the end of a long, anyone who's been at Arches National Monument would know what I'm talking about. You drive all the way in on a long road to the very, very end of the road, and there's the campground. And it's, if there was ever a place with stars, this is it. So when you're camping, and then you're surrounded by beautiful rounded red rocks. And I remember walking out of the campground and onto the rocks in late night, and laying down on a slick rock and just watching bats flying everywhere all around. And I don't know why it's my favorite memory, but I think it has to do with just how absolutely wild the place was. And
yeah.
I mean, that competes with some other memories, but that one is a beautiful, peaceful, natural memory for me. Not about the people so much, although there have been great memories there too, but just the place.
Yeah. Huh,
that's awesome.
So conversely, is there a worst camping memory that you're emotionally able to share?
Oh, it always has to do with rain, I think. Rain and leaky trailers, and I think there's been too many of those, you know. The downside to a vintage trailer is they often leak.
Right.
What?
You know, I don't really have bad camping memories, because I think that either I forget them or just incorporate it into the fun. But good. I think that probably the issue would be rain and, you know, rain and cold and trying to keep your bed from getting wet.
Right.
Yeah, I don't really have bad camping memories.
Yeah, that's the worst, is when it's dripping right on you at night.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's half the fun. So well, Steve, thank you so much for what you do for the vintage RV community and for your time today. We really appreciate getting to know you. And for our audience, anyone who has a lust for vintage trailers, because they're very, very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Vintage Trailer Supply is just an absolute great resource for the hobby.
Well, thank you so much. And thanks for what you guys do too. Just continuing to educate everyone about all the multifacets of this incredible freedom and independence and adventure that we all have an opportunity to do through RVing around the United States. It's just, it's great. So thanks for all the work you do to educate everyone.
Our pleasure. Steve, thank you again. And we will let you get on with your day.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Great. Well, thank you too. Thank you so much. Talk to you later.
Whether you have a vintage or a modern trailer, you might be winterized right now and not have water in your tanks, but you still really want to go camping.
Yeah.
And so if that's the case and you're going camping, but you don't want to use your water system, why not get some Wolverine Tough bottles, fill them up, and take them with you, and you can use those as your water source.
Yeah. What they are foldable plastic bags, and there's everything from one small enough to carry on your hikes and such to 8-gallon bags. And these are really high quality US made bags that we use. For example, a few weeks ago in the Hamas Mountains, we were boondocking. We just filled up our Wolverine bags and used those to transfer water into the trailer. We used them a lot at the Albuquerque Balloon Fiesta.
We did. And we used them a bit in Quartzsite. And the one that he talked about that you can take on a hike, you know, it's like a liter or so, and it has a carabiner so you can hook it right on your belt loop. So that's very handy.
Yeah, these are really well thought through products. They don't have a lot of sharp edges. When they're full, of course, they are 5 gallons or 8 gallons or whatever. But when they're empty, they fold up pretty flat. All of the fittings on them are really high quality. So, for example, you could get the 5-gallon bags and use those at those water fill stations at grocery stores and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of really neat options for we RVers.
I really like their handles. You know, they're kind of extra thick and pretty comfortable. I mean, they're still a cut piece of plastic, but not bad for a handle on a plastic bag. And also any of the bags that you might want to use hanging up, like the 5 and 8 gallons, maybe you want to hang that up on some kind of a bar or something. They have a big old metal grommet on them so you can easily hang them.
Yeah, they're just a good product. We have the full story at Stressless Camping as well as a discount. We'll put a link in our show notes and maybe we'll see you out there even if your RV is winterized. And by the way, can you still use a winterized RV? Absolutely.
Yes.
We have that story too at stresslesscamping.com.
Our recipe this week comes once again from Quartzsite, from the potlucks, Maryland.
Those potlucks were epic.
I know, and just really got me rolling with the recipe, so that makes me very happy. And speaking of rolling, this week I am sharing Maryland's cinnamon rolls. They're very, very easy to make in the RV, and they start with the can or the tube of Grand cinnamon rolls. I have made cinnamon rolls from scratch. I am not willing to do that in an RV. It takes a lot of equipment. It takes a lot of space. It takes a lot of time. It takes a good amount of a good temperature. These just tear off the paper and hit the thing on the counter.
Does anyone else flinch when you bust open
every
those
time
roll things?
But Marilyn also adds a special touch to hers, and she adds a little cream in the bottom and doctors up the icing so that it's extra gooey and yummy and pecans and deliciousness.
Mm-mm.
So check out the recipe on the website for Maryland's cinnamon rolls. Again, super easy. You can do it in a disposable pan. So if you take it to a potluck and somebody else loves them and you've had plenty, you can send them on their way with a different person. You don't have to get your pan back. A really great potluck item, especially for breakfast. But hey, I would eat a cinnamon roll.
Anytime.
Cinnamon is the best flavor.
Absolutely. Here's something that we have been remiss sort of about. Before Quartzsite, we mashed the entry handle on our Rockwood Mini Light with our awning.
We did.
It's one of those stuff happens. But we had been wanting the Moride safety rail on our trailer since...
Well, since we had the one that got rear-ended last summer.
That had the Moride safety rail. And it was one of the first installations of that technology. We had it there at the Frog Rally. And for all of the prototype stuff on that trailer, people just lost their minds over that Moride safety rail.
Well, it was very visible and very obvious. Right, but yeah, also true. A super great idea. And we didn't have one on the newer trailer. And we wanted one and wanted one.
Well,
so,
we just smashed the handle.
So I smashed the handle, so we'd have to replace it.
Yeah.
I didn't really do it on purpose, but because I couldn't get the other handle out of the way easily... And that's one advantage to having the Moride safety rail is it just folds right up against the trailer.
Well, I also like that it extends 42.5 inches from the wall of our trailer.
Right. So from the bottom step, you can already get a hold of that railing.
Yeah. And it is more secure. We were very fortunate in that the people from Moride actually installed our safety rail in the side of our trailer. And I watched them do it. It was pretty quick and easy.
Yeah.
Typically how they would do it, they would ship you the product and have you install it or have someone you know install it. But anyway, this thing kind of just screws to the sidewall of your RV and uses a magnet to hold itself in place. And then you just pull it out when you're ready to use it. It's much nicer than the typical handle on an RV. So we'll have pictures of that and a story. It was neat that Moride installed it. They did have to notch a piece of trim along the bottom of our travel trailer. So, you know, they're all different.
And yeah, they're all going to be different. And the important thing is to know that they're only intended to use with fifth wheels or travel trailers that have fiberglass walls. So the flat, smooth walls.
So if you have a stick and tin trailer with the corrugated walls,
it's not going to really work. Or the curved walls like on a motorhome, that's not going to work.
Or an Airstream.
That's right. Anything though with that flat fiberglass smooth wall. And if you even have to cut a little bit of trim, that's okay because the safety rail is such a great railing.
It really is. Something I found out from the dude at Moride, Brendan, he said there's actually like a metal lip around the door sort of inside the fiberglass. And so that's essentially what they mount it to.
So it's not just attached to fiberglass. It's actually attached to some frame,
right?
Some door frame.
Yeah, that's what he was telling me. So there you go. I learned something watching him install it and we're very pleased with it. So if you're looking to get a handle on your entry and exit into your RV, perhaps the Moride safety rail is for you.
So do you have an RV you're going to share with us this week?
Kind of not really.
Okay.
What I have is, you know, an open house. I keep going back to that. And I cannot wait to attend again this coming year, which we plan to
do. I get to go this time.
Yeah, I'm bringing Peggy with me, the voice of reason.
Wow.
Sort of, kind of. There were a lot of things announced, and we've already talked about the Furion Chill Cube and how dramatically better it is than your typical RV air conditioner.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, we may be able to test one out firsthand. We'll see. But anyway,
what?
We'll see. But another thing Lippert announced was a new suspension system, predominantly for fifth wheels. And again, we have talked last week about the frame flex issue with fifth wheel chassis. Again, I think that's a deeper issue, and I would love to see any frame that has had that, the trailer weighed, to see if it's overweight, which I suspect it would be, or that there's other failures, the body coming off the frame, whatever. Anyway, so what this suspension system is it's a coil suspension system for fifth wheel on what's called a trailing arm suspension. Okay, the way the normal suspension on a fifth wheel is typically leaf springs, which is what you found on your Model T. Nothing advanced, nothing special, not all that great at isolating shocks and vibration from the road. It's an antique suspension, let's be honest. It does the job, and there are upgrades you can do to them, or some manufacturers actually care enough to put in a little bit better systems. But this is a wholly new system that uses coil springs like you probably have in your car, and actually uses shock absorbers like you have in your car. And it provides not only a much more smooth ride for your fifth wheel, but also far more suspension travel. So if you do hit a bump on the highway, it doesn't reach the limit of the suspension and then transmit all that shock up into your fifth wheel. It's just a big improvement over fifth wheel suspensions that we typically see thus far. Now, yeah, some of you may have gotten air suspension upgrades on fifth wheels. I know a lot of people who buy a fifth wheel realize just how lousy the suspension is and then spend a great deal of money to upgrade that. Well, if your fifth wheel manufacturer actually cares, you may find that this new KERP coil spring suspension is under the fifth wheel and you don't have to upgrade it. It's better than most fifth wheels out there. So anyway, I have a little article about it at stresslesscamping.com, and it's just another advancement that I saw at Open House that KERT is making. KERT is part of Lippert, and Lippert makes a lot of the components that go into your RV. So now Lippert owns KERT, which makes suspensions and towing stuff. And Lippert owns Furion, which makes RV appliances. So it's a giant company, but they do get a lot of grief. And I don't think they always deserve that. Knowing the people at Lippert, I think they do a pretty doggone good job, but they will also build whatever you ask for. So yeah, if you're an RV company that doesn't care and you want the cheapest whatever, Lippert's like, all right, give you what you want. You know, the customer is always right. And that's why when I suggest that you shop for your next RV from the frame up, that's why.
That's why. Last week's question of the week was, do you have a sort of a season opener checklist, a thing that you do like kind of as part of your de-winterizing? That's what we talked with Dustin about last week. And we don't have a ton of answers, but David and Teresa and Ron all said they don't need that because they camp all year long. And I am going to make a suggestion in a moment here. Eric said no, but it's probably not a bad idea. Good thinking, Eric. Cindy doesn't really have a list, but she goes camping nearby at the beginning so that she can kind of go through things and make sure that everything is stocked and working and really in good shape. Travis basically dewinterizes and then spends a couple hours walking around inside and out to make sure that things work. Bill has a short list. Sanitize the fresh system, grease the bearings, and fix anything I can. Now, that part is probably not that short.
Well, it depends.
It's a short list. And Ingle has a vintage trailer, so every December or January, he has the axle inspected, has the bearings lubed and serviced, and then has the seals inspected and repaired. So it's good that those of us who get to camp all year don't have to necessarily have a reopening of the camper kind of a list, but that doesn't stop us from needing a list, a maintenance list, an annual list, a seasonal list, you know, whatever. There are different time periods in which we should do different things. So we have talked before about our article called Checklists Make for Stressless Camping. And what we realized during this process is we didn't actually have a checklist of maintenance type things. So check out Checklists Make for Stressless Camping. And now we will have a maintenance list as well.
Whew, got some work cut out for
me. And this week, Tony, what was your question this week?
There was someone on some Facebook forum that said, what are the best practices for staying overnight at places like Wally World or Cracker Barrel, that sort of thing? How do you stay on your best behavior so that we keep getting invited back as RVers? So the question of the week is, what are your best practices for Wally barreling?
Wally docking, boon barreling, whatever you call it, wherever it is that you spend the night, what are your practices? Do you unhook? Do you use your slides? Do you, you know, all those things? Yeah. How do you make it a good experience for yourself and for your host?
Right. Because the more your host enjoys your having been there, the more likely you're going to be invited back or not get all of us kicked out.
Right. So you can answer that question. You can look at answers to all the questions. You can ask your own questions, or you can just say nice things like Brian did.
Yeah, thank you, Brian.
On our fun and friendly Stressless Campers Facebook group.
And of course, you know, we do our once a week newsletter, which is absolutely free, which has links to the stories, videos, podcasts, and all the things to help you get the most out of your stressless camping experience. To join our newsletter family, just visit stresslesscamping.com, and under the hamburger menu, there's a contact us and there's the form to sign up. It's free. We never share your information, and we only do one newsletter a week because we're lazy.
Busy.
Busy. That's it. Yeah, that's the ticket.
Once you're done signing up for the newsletter and you're still hanging out on our site, you know you can find the show notes for this episode, which is number 246, on the podcast page at stresslesscamping.com.
Absolutely, and that's where you'll also find discounts and deals for the best deals on the things you'll need for your stressless camping adventure. And if you've got a great deal for our audience, let us know.
And we are in all the social places. So when you've seen everything you want to see at stresslesscamping.com, use those links at the top right and go visit us at, I don't know, Instagram and Facebook and X and Twitter and all the things that
even
do and
TikTok,
do not exist.
If it's still
and
there.
TikTok. That's right. Oh, right. If there's still a TikTok.
There still is a TikTok. Of course, if you don't want to miss a future episode of the Stressless Camping Podcast, it is free to subscribe on any podcast app.
And we are saving you a seat around our virtual campfire.
And a review will help others find this podcast. And of course, the more people who join our little podcast family, the better the guests and the more information we're able to get. We, in fact, did just get one review this past week, a 3-star review.
We did.
Our first 3-star review.
Our first non-5-star review.
And it's from a dude in Germany. Well, I assume a dude. Who said, well, I don't like Jimmy Buffett. Well, I have a message for you.
I mean, if that's where we're going to get dinged, I guess that's fair enough. He didn't say, you guys don't know anything about RVing, which would not be a good review. And fortunately, we haven't had any of those. You know, we don't ask you for a 5-star review. We ask you for an honest review.
Absolutely.
And thank goodness all of the others have been honest 5-star reviews.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if somebody doesn't like Jimmy Buffett, we can't help it if they're wrong.
Yeah, there you go. Well, of course, another way to spread the word of stressless camping is to share anything you find on our website in your social world. We try to have a lot of articles that answer questions people ask on social media. And so if you want to look like a hot potato, I don't know, you can find an article that answers a question at Stressless Camping and share that with the people who follow you on socials. It's very helpful and we really appreciate it.
We do indeed.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And I'm going to listen to some Jimmy Buffett. So there. With that being said, we always appreciate you. No matter what music preference you have, or what type of camper, or whether you're seasonal, full-time, part-time.
We love you all.
We do. And with that, we'd like to wish you
stressless camping.
We hope you learned a lot and had some fun and got some tips for your next stress-less camping adventure. We're honored by your reviews on Apple Podcasts, which helps others find us too. Don't forget to subscribe so you won't miss out on the adventure, and we look forward to your joining us next week. Until then, happy camping!
No, the mic! Maybe it is, I'm not sure.